Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Code and the Coding Coders Who Code It. I am your host, Drew Bragg, and I'm privileged today to be joined by Ben Orenstein. Ben, would you please introduce yourself for any of the audience members that don't know you yet?
Yeah, I am one of the co-founders of Tuple, which is a remote pair programming tool, and started that about 5 years ago with two good friends of mine, two co-founders. Before that, I was a developer for something like 10 years, wrote a lot of Ruby, a lot of Rails, used to work at Thoughtbot. Back in the day, I used to go around the world speaking at conferences, taught a lot about Ruby, taught a lot about object-oriented design, and also my first love, which was Vim.
Well, before we get this party fully started, I did want to just say, for the record, and my audience members, my listeners will know this, I've brought it up numerous times, I love Tuple. It is a fantastic tool. It makes pairing remotely so much better. And I've used it for things that weren't even pairing. I've used it for just regular project collaboration. So kudos to you and the whole team on such a wonderful product. But the way that the episode is going to work is I'm going to ask you three questions. I'm going to ask you what you're working on. I'm going to ask you what blockers you have. If you don't have a current blocker, a recent blocker is fine, but we're going to want you to tell us how you went around solving it. And then the last question is, what's something cool, new, or interesting that you've recently learned or discovered or even built? It doesn't have to be coding related either. I know you're not really a coder anymore, but it absolutely can be if you're dabbling on the side. So without any further ado or fanboying on my part, Ben, what are you working on?
I actually am going to make you do a little more fanboying for a second.
Okay, cool, cool.
Because I do this for like product research purposes.
Okay.
So like, cool. When someone tells me they like Tuple, I'd love to hear from you what could be improved about it. But maybe we could start with, why do you like it? Why don't you just use something else?
Well, Zoom is kind of the default in my world from before Tuple. The before
and this isn't just because I want to hear you say nice things. This is because I want to know like what we should do more of.
No, absolutely. Zoom, immediately when you start sharing, and this is for me personally, for other people that I'm coding with, for people that were just like, hey, look at my screen. Almost every single time someone's like, oh, hold on, let me get Zoom out of the way. And that is like the number one thing that I love about Tuple. And I think the thing that people first notice when I introduce them to Tuple is it's out of your way. There's a red border around your screen to let you know you're sharing your screen, and boom, done. I love that the video of yourself component is like completely optional. And even when you do share it with the other person, you don't see yourself. I am so easily distracted by my own dumb face.
Yeah, everybody is.
Yeah, it's great that someone else can like, hey, I like seeing the other person I'm talking to. Facial expressions are important. I just don't want to see me. That by default is great. And then the tools that you have as the person that's not doing the sharing, they're powerful, but they're not in your face. Like the fact that I can just dump a link in and it opens in the browser, that's awesome. That's like, hey, yes, I'm sending you this link because you're going to open it. Don't like get rid of the extra step. The drawing on the screen, Zoom has that, but it feels more intentional. With Zoom, it feels like, yeah, we had to share screen sharing because that's something that people do, whatever. With Tuple, it's like, yeah, this is our product. We spend a lot of time thinking about it and it shows. So yeah.
Nice.
There you go. There's my pitch for anybody not using it.
Sure. And then what can we do to make it better? Like what's annoying?
Well, here you go. I haven't submitted this bug report, but I can't change my email. It says it's set by GitHub, but it's not the GitHub email that I have. It's my company email. So there you go. There's a bug for you.
So you auth with GitHub then?
Yeah, I do.
Gotcha. We're ripping that out, by the way.
Oh, good. Good to know.
Too many bugs.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Problem probably solved then.
Yeah, hopefully.
And not so much anymore. Probably about a year ago, we were having weird issues with the quality of the pairing sessions, but we were also tunneling through something called Zscaler, which I suspect was actually the issue. Since I now on a personal machine that doesn't have anything like that, I don't have any issues, but it's also like a year later. So I don't know if you guys have just done a lot of work. I know you guys are constantly doing work to improve that, but
it's probably a little bit both, actually. We have had some situations where when you're in a weird network topology, things get a little bit messy, which we have done some work on to fix. And also, yeah, just getting out of a situation where you need to tunnel all your traffic through somewhere specific totally will improve the quality. So It's probably both.
Cool. That's what I have off of the top of my head.
I appreciate it. Thank you. That's we'll get that GitHub thing, that email thing fixed for you.
All right, cool.
But yeah, we added GitHub auth one day, and this is like a classic iceberg feature. I was like, we should let people auth with GitHub. We're a developer tool. That totally makes sense. It'll like help with conversion probably. And man, there's so many downstream effects of like, oh, we have multiple authentication methods. Oh, the GitHub one has these quirks. Oh, they pick one of their 5 email addresses they have there. Oh, how do you change the email address? Do you need to re-authenticate with GitHub? It was just like turned to this thing, and like, you should have seen this flow chart that one of our developers made, or like as they were redoing the onboarding of like all these different states you could get into. And recently we were doing another enhancement, and I just like pulled the lever and was just like, hold on, this is not worth it. Let's just delete the whole thing and kill this project. Everyone was like, yeah, that sounds great.
See ya. Too many problems. I got it. But back to the show questions.
Yes.
Because I don't know how you started interviewing me on my show, but time to like get back to it. What are you particularly working on?
Okay. So I am working on kind of the same thing I've been working on, which is Tuple as a product, but things are changing a little bit. So for the first 5 years of Tuple, I was the CEO, and I am no longer the CEO. So kind of the thing I'm working on right now is actually a transition of me being CEO to me being head of product. Over the last couple of years, I started noticing that I had just sort of like lost my mojo a little bit. And I was just like, I'm a bit less excited about work than I used to be. And that kind of just kept happening, and it kind of kept getting a little worse. And I just kind of couldn't really get back to where I was excitement-wise. For a while, I was kind of like gritting my teeth and just pushing forward anyway. But eventually, it got to a point where I was like, yeah, I'm still just not really feeling like this is working for me. And my co-founders, who are good friends of mine, were kind of like, you don't have to keep doing this. You seem to think that you have to and you don't. And it's like, yeah, maybe I should not. And so we decided, all right, let's find another CEO. I'm going to step down. I've always loved working on the product and doing a bit of marketing. That has always been the thing that I found most fun. But the things that like CEOs are supposed to be doing just like weren't getting me as excited. Like, you should be focusing on hiring. You should be sort of courting candidates for months and years to stay in touch with them so that when they eventually become available, you can add them to the team. You should run all hands. You should plan work and things like that. Tell people what to do over here. That was never like what I liked the most about the job. So we said, okay, what if let's have somebody else be CEO and I will take over the product work plus a little bit of marketing, which was always where I wanted to be anyway. What I focused on to the detriment a bit of the company. And so fortunately, one of my other co-founders, Spencer, was interested in being CEO and had the ideas and is fired up about those things. And so we basically just swapped. Now he's in and I am doing some slightly different title-wise at least.
Awesome. Well, it's awesome that you were in a situation where you were able to make that transition to work on the things that you're excited about. Work is so much better when you're excited about it.
Yeah, totally.
Monumentally.
Yeah. So much of the reason we started this company was to enjoy what we were doing. Like, we didn't want to make jobs that we didn't like. And I sort of ended up in that spot where I was kind of like, oh no, I created this role for myself and I don't really want it. And it was like, uh-oh, how did I end up here where I was supposed to be in control and yet I ended up in the spot? So it's nice to reverse that.
I mean, you're going from CEO to head of product, which is still a non-coding role. Do you ever kind of miss the writing of the code, or you're like, nah, I'm good. I wrote my code. It was fun, but
I started missing it more lately, actually.
Okay.
I gave a talk at Laracon this year, and I started off by saying, like, I haven't written code in 5 years. And I was like, wow, I don't love that that's true. So actually, part of this transition, this is not decided yet, but one thing I've been thinking lately is maybe I'll get back into it. Like, our interface is written in React, and most of it is, at least. And I think I might get back into that and like be able to, it would be nice to contribute directly to the product. Like, you have more leverage and more throughput when you are like sort of managing people who are doing projects. Like, you can have multiple streams of things happening simultaneously, but it kind of sucks to like never do the work yourself and like not have your hands in it and be able to like do those kind of rapid changes and iteration and playing and experimenting. And I really have missed that. And so to run a software product and not write any code for it, I don't regret that decision. I think that was correct, but I'm sort of excited that by giving up some of the CEO responsibilities, I now don't feel like I'm being irresponsible by doing some of the code. So I think I want to take advantage of that opportunity and get back to it a little bit.
That's cool. If you're still passionate about coding, it's good to be able to just say like, hey, it's part of my job to get to write a little bit of code. And sure, it'll take some fancy scheduling or finagling to fit it in with all of the responsibilities of a head of product. I don't actually know what those responsibilities are, but I assume that there's more than just like, yeah, log in and open your editor and go to town.
Yeah, definitions vary, but my take is just sort of talk to users, have a high bar for quality, figure out what we're going to build, make sure the things we build are awesome, and sort of spin that loop.
Now, the real question is, will you remember all of your Vim key bindings?
Probably not all of them. Probably a lot. I mean, I still use Vim for various things. Like, I still do most of my writing in Vim. So at least the prose stuff I'm pretty up to date on. There'll be a lot of new things, or sort of old things I'll have to refresh, I think.
When you guys are working on Tuple, and now especially because you're just focused on the product itself, what does a roadmap look like for that product? Is it a lot of, I'm talking to other folks and I keep hearing this same thing, that is going to be the next thing we kind of refine into the next feature? Or do you already have in your head, I have these ideas and now I'm going to go validate with my customers that this is a good idea?
It's a mix. I read every like support request and feature request and bit of feedback that comes in. And so I sort of am constantly bathed in a stream of customer feedback, which is very useful. So I feel like the voice of the customer is already pretty loud in my head. We have a small group of people that we like have a shared Slack channel for that we show early versions of things. And so we get some feedback often at the mock-up phase or the idea phase. I have friends that I bounce ideas off of as well that are developers. So it's like, if we did this, when I was at this conference, when I was at Laracon recently, I had a great like brainstorming session with some Tuple fans that I found. And I was like, what if we did this? Well, what if we did this? And it's a smattering of different things. And sometimes we just make stuff and then put it out and see what happens. Sometimes it's just like, we just think this would be good. I'm excited by this idea. Let's do a V1 and ship it and see if it gets any play.
How does your engineering team work? Is it, not to use very stereotypical cookie cutter terms, but is it something like Agile or Scrum, even though I think those are sort of the same thing nowadays?
We've done a bunch of things. We keep bouncing between different ideas. It's a hard problem. We did some shape up that was kind of decent for a while. The thing we're doing right now is basically a monthly focus doc. So once a month, we put out a thing. Like we do sort of towards the end of the month, we sort of figure out what our projects are, get those kind of lined up, make sure everyone's on board. And then we sort of say, okay, August, this is what we're doing. Here's what the various parts of the company are going to be working on for the month. And then kind of repeat that planning towards the end.
So you're head of product. Do you have someone that's like, sort of the you of the engineering team, or is that really you helping to drive some of those technical decisions?
There is a sort of a me equivalent over on the engineering team who can sort of comment, like help me like verify the technical feasibility of things, or sort of say like, hey, you want this? That's really hard. Can we maybe do this?
Right.
Which is a really useful part of the planning process, because it's tough to know from the outside, like what's, even as a programmer, what's hard and what's easy.
You said that it's React for the UI, and then if I remember correctly, C++ for the back end.
Yeah. When we say back end, like we have a Rails app that handles like billing and administration stuff.
Right.
That's very simple. That's not much of the app, really. The real heavy lifting in Tuple is, yes, C++. We have a cross-platform real-time communication engine that handles the webcam streams, audio streams, screen streams, connection protocols, that kind of thing.
Did you have experience with C++ going into it, or no. You just kind of knew, like, this
None
is
of
what
us
we
did.
Need to...
Oh, None gosh. Of us did. We were three web developers, and yeah, we ended up writing a real-time communication app in C++ that ran on the desktop, which was quite an adventure. Huge kudos to my co-founder, Spencer, who bore the brunt of that technical adventure. But yes, so we sort of just had to, like, do it, and we started off with simpler answers to this problem, and none of them gave the performance we wanted. And so we ended up writing it in C++. And these days we have more expertise on the team from people that know C++. And so as a team, we've leveled up in that language. In the beginning, it was a bit of a mess.
Before Tuple was a product and it was just kind of the idea, how did that idea really come about? I mean, sure, you're all programmers, so you're kind of like, hey, pairing remotely kind of blows right now. we wish there was a better tool and we're programmers so we can build one. But like, how did it really go from, yeah, it'd be nice to have a better tool to let's go learn C++ so we can write this thing?
So we were inspired definitely by an app called Screen Hero, which was a remote collaboration tool that existed before we did. And this was a really nice tool. They did a great job. They focused on low latency, which is something that we care about a lot as well, because remote control, that matters. And it got acquired by, sort of acquired by Slack and shut down. We loved it and it disappeared and it felt like there was an opportunity. And so I was intrigued by saying, there's this good thing for this and now there's not. And no one seems to have created a spiritual successor to this. That's kind of weird. And that was sort of the germ of the idea. I had sort of convinced one of my co-founders to like take the leap. We were like, pretty close. We're like, we think we're going to do this. This seems like the idea. And I reached out to one of the Screen Hero co-founders and said, hey, I'm thinking of starting something that would be kind of like Screen Hero was to like fill that gap. Any chance I could talk to you about this? His name is Faraz. And he said, yes. And he was super generous with his time and jumped on a call with us. And he was like, yep, you should do it. Totally still an opportunity. It's going to be hard. You're going to have to learn C++, but you know, go for it. And that encouragement in that moment, I think really pushed us over the line that we maybe, it's unclear to me. I think he could have tipped us either way at that point. A strong no probably would have killed the idea, but his strong yes meant it was just very clear after that meeting, like, we're doing this. This is happening.
Right. That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. That's nice.
I owe him a lot.
Nice feeling.
Yeah. I owe him a lot. He really like that sort of willingness to encourage someone. It's such a powerful thing. Tyler Cowen talks about this. Love this as an idea of like sometimes like the most impact you can have is by encouraging someone to be more ambitious. My life is forever changed by going for this thing and making this company. And it could have been if he just was kind of like, yeah, just kind of negative about it or kind of just doubted we could do it or wasn't encouraged. Like it might not have happened. And so I'm very grateful that he did that.
Yeah, I think all of us who enjoy Tuple are very glad he did that because it saves us from having to pair over Zoom.
Yes. Yeah.
So blockers for you are going to look a little different than the typical blocker for a developer who's like, I'm trying to figure out how to fix the performance on this, or we introduced caching too early and now blockers. What's a blocker look like for you?
Well, yeah, I would say like a thing I'm working on, something I was working on today that I feel like is not resolved yet. So it's kind of blocky is previously the head of product and the CEO of Tuple were the same person. I was a very product-focused CEO. So it was always like, I'm the last word on the product for both reasons, because I'm like the product person, I'm like the product owner, and I'm the CEO. And now there is a head of product and a CEO. And I have very strong opinions about the product still, of course, but somebody else has like the ultimate decision-making authority. And that's like, I want him to have that. And so we're now trying to figure out, how do we navigate this situation? Does the CEO sort of set a company goal and the head of product is going to shape product features in order to sort of help hit that goal? Should the CEO be able to just say like, let's add this feature? And we all say, yes, sir, we'll figure that out and take that and turn that into something. It's sort of up in the air. And like, we all want to do this well and we're all on the same team. So it's a collaborative problem, but it's a thing that we're going to have to figure out.
I assume, having never run a product company myself, that because you have co-founders that, you know, were friends and you've executed this product extremely well for the last 5 years, it's not really, I'm worried that you're going to take my company and run away with it. It's more of just like clearly defining roles.
Yes, totally. Yeah. We are each 1/3 owners in this company, and this company represents a huge chunk of all of our net worths. So our incentives are extremely aligned. No one wants to tank the company. No one wants to like destroy revenue or like make the product bad. Like we all want the exact same thing. So that's great. And yes, I would say for a 5-year-old company with 3 co-founders, we have had almost no co-founder drama. Co-founder drama kills companies all the time.
Yeah.
And we really have dodged kind of all of that or sort of worked through all of that. And so we have a lot of experience collaborating and handling tricky situations and talking about feelings and being honest with each other. I'm optimistic that with incentive alignment and good communication and a history, we'll figure out something.
Here's a tough question. The app that you sort of were replacing in the developer ecosystem was acquired by Slack and then essentially killed. if someone came and made a reasonable offer to you guys for Tuple, would it be something you had to think about? A hard no? Sure. Cool. I'll retire.
A couple of years ago, an answer would have been like pretty hard no. Like, this is like too much fun. We're just going to run this forever. 5 years of working on a pair programming app. It's engaging. It's a nice way to spend my days. I don't think this is like the last product I'm ever going to build. So there's some future where I'm stepping away from this company in some regard. I think I'm going to need a new thing eventually. This isn't my last company. It's not my last product. And so does that look like some other CEO running the company while we manage it from the board level? Possibly. If the right acquirer came along with the right price, is that something we'd have to consider? Yeah, I think so.
Not like, hey, yeah, we're hoping to retire on Tuple. Certainly not a, nope, well, we're not bailing ever. Yeah.
Yeah, more middle of the ground. I think we built a lot of trust over the years and like I care about our customers. And so I would like really love to not see us sell to some PE company who's like, this is a valuable revenue stream that we can optimize and like raise your prices and like just put the product in maintenance mode. Obviously, I don't want all this hard work to like end up in that state. I care about our customers and I care about my legacy and the trust and all that. So it would have to be the right people. Whereas like you can do a good job of this. You can make it better, at the least not make it worse.
Well, I appreciate you answering that because that's a bit of a tough question to even like formulate the question and, yeah. and ask it to someone is like, hey, would you get rid of your company given the opportunity?
I think every CEO would tell you, no, of course not. We have nothing but huge plans for the future and it's all rainbows. But now I'm not CEO anymore. So I can be more honest and tell you from my perspective. It's like, yeah, could that be a possible future? But honestly, I wouldn't be sad about a future where my day-to-day involvement with the company is reduced and people are still running it and still excited. Like if we have a CEO who's fired up, if we have a leadership team we feel good about, running a company from the board, I think is actually very fun. It's one of those things where you just give advice and then other people have to go do it. And like meeting once a quarter and reviewing the results and having some thoughts and like, it doesn't sound so bad. It's nice to have an asset that throws off profit. So yeah, that could happen too.
And you've only recently become not CEO and just head of product. So who knows, maybe just the change will invigorate you enough to be like, yeah, maybe later, but now I'm having fun again. So no, thank you.
Totally. Yep. Absolutely. We'll see what this new world feels like after everybody's right. settled down a little bit. And another thing, like we just hired out of sales that we feel pretty excited about. And like we're investing in the team more than we have. Like we're dedicating more of our revenue towards people. So we're going to be fleshing out the team on the engineering side, on the marketing side, on the sales side. So it could be that 3-6 months from now, the company is way more exciting. It could be that these results are like, wow, we're like really, we thought we were doing well before and now like things are exploding. So it could be that all that is very reinvigorating. And I'm like, actually, I'm doing this. This is great.
How big is the team now?
It's going to be 10 or 11.
Okay. Still nice and small and fast.
Yeah. Especially considering onboarding our first users onto our Windows client.
Congrats.
Thank you. 3 operating systems with a team of 10.
That's
not
impressive.
All of them are even engineers. So it's kind of wild.
Yeah, that's very impressive. There's a lot of cool things in software. There's a lot of cool things, I'm sure, in just the art of product. What is something cool or new or interesting that you've learned, discovered, read, built yourself, want to build, anything? Sky's the limit on this one.
So I'll give you 2 answers. One is an app that I'm using that I like called Well Spent, which is an iOS app. And it is like a blocking app. Like it blocks time-wasting websites and apps and things like that. But it does it in like a really sort of clever way that I haven't seen before, which is you can sort of tell it, like what tone of voice do you want it to use when it blocks things for you? So you can have it be like mocking, which is like, wow, did you really want to spend 30 minutes on TikTok? Or you can have it be like encouraging, which is like, take a break. You can do it. Or it'll ask you like, how do you want us to like motivate you to stop? To like, I have it set to, it will encourage me to do things I wish I were doing instead. So it'll be like, did you maybe want to go for a walk? Or like do a self massage or something. Like it's a configurable blocker that sort of, according to your personality, will get you off, like usher you off these sites, which I've really been enjoying.
That's very clever. How easy is it to like swap on the fly? Like today I'm feeling self-conscious, so it needs to be nice to me.
Yeah, it's very easy. It's got a bunch of options too. So it's like there's a lot of different vibes you can choose. And it has some like really nice like UX details of, it doesn't just wait. Like, oh, you've set an hour budget for Twitter. You do an hour and all of a sudden it turns off. After 10 minutes, it will block and say, hey, it's been 10 minutes. Did you want to maybe go get some exercise? like the default button is like, yes, I'll do that. And it closes the app. But the sort of secondary call thing is like, no, this is worth it. Or no, this is time well spent. And so it sort of makes you say like, no, I should be on Twitter for another 10 minutes right now. And it's like, should I though? And it really like does a good job of making me think. It makes me more conscious of like the decisions I'm making there.
Right. It makes you a lot more mindful of your time being spent. And I think that's excellent. That is a good app to have in your arsenal.
So well spent, one word.
Well spent. Mm-hmm. All right.
And then the other thing that I've been really enjoying is I'm reading this book called A Short History of Nearly Everything.
Okay.
Which is by Bill Bryson, who's a wonderful writer. And it's sort of a journey through what is the universe? What is chemistry and biology and physics and the scientists that's, you know, discovered things and the order they did? And it's really fascinating. And I've learned an interesting trivia fact that I'm going to quiz you on now. It's chock full of them, but here's one. So how many Earths do you think you could fit inside the sun?
Oh, I've heard this one before, and it is not the number that I ever land on. It's an insane...
It's an imperfect packing, right? Because you're putting spheres inside spheres, so it's not perfect. But how many could you get in there?
I am going to get it way wrong, but I'm going to say like a couple trillion probably.
Wow. It is 960,000.
Really? That's it? I thought it was way higher. Maybe that's the problem. I go way high and it's always much lower. And I'm like, really?
When someone asks you how much do you think this is, the bro move is to guess very low.
Oh, okay.
Just want you to know this for the future. So if you could have been like four, and then my fact would have seemed cool. Instead, now it seems unimpressive. Let's stop and reflect. Million Earths practically fit inside the sun.
Yeah.
Like when I think of the solar system, like, yeah, the sun is like 10 times bigger than the Earth, maybe 100 times. No, it's so much bigger than that. 99.99% of the mass in our solar system is in the sun. Everything else is just this like rounding error. All the other planets are rounding errors mass-wise. It's all in the sun. We're basically like just jokes and just orbiting the sun.
And we're not even the biggest planet orbiting the sun.
Not. And everything you and I will probably ever see or do or think is happening on this tiny little minuscule percentage of a little bit of dust that accreted together. Like two dust particles just like became friends and then started accreting more. And here we are today.
We are stardust.
It's madness.
That probably is the only thing that kind of bums me out about our short lifespans as humans is I know I will not be exploring up there. And like growing up on Star Trek is like, damn, I just want to go up there and look at the Earth from that far out. And
you might get to Mars. That might be doable.
Maybe.
You could probably get to space if you're willing to pay for it.
Think I'd ever be able to afford it. That is one of those things that I'm like, yeah, I would pay for that.
Nothing makes me like really feel my own mortality as thinking about the sun burning out and realizing that I won't make it. I'll never see it.
Yeah.
There's something about thinking like there is a date where the sun will run out of fuel and I will 100% be dead. And there's just something about those things together like that makes me feel the actual mortality in a way that other things don't. I don't know why.
It may have been you. It may have been someone else that I follow doing the poster and you check off every week or every 4 weeks. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I have a poster called My Life in Weeks.
Yeah. That's got to be a weird feeling, at least maybe after you get used to it and the novelty wears off, maybe it isn't. I feel like the first couple of times you check a week off and you see it, you're just like, holy shit.
Yeah. So this is like, it's a poster and it's, each line on the poster is a year. So it's 52 boxes left to right. And then it's something like 92 lines of up and down. And so every week you check off another box. And yeah, it's crazy. I like having it because I think it's important to remember these things. And this poster represents a best case scenario in a way. 92? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe not. And so it helps sort of look at it too. Like I'm 40 now. And I look at the sort of also has blocked them into decades. So there's like the 40s are a little bit slightly separated from the 50s. And I look at the 40s and I'm like, okay, yeah, 40s, I can probably take on some big projects. I can probably do some awesome stuff. 50s? Yeah, actually, yeah, probably. I could maybe like, could I start another company in my 50s? Totally. Could I like take on a big thing or like, yeah, make something awesome happen? Yeah, I think so. 60s? Yeah, I guess so. Maybe, but I'm probably kind of getting worn out by then. I'm probably kind of tired. 70s? Probably not. And so it reminds me, it's kind of like now is the time. I got some time left. I'm not old. It's not too late. But every week I fill in another one of these little boxes and it's marching towards the bottom there. So get after it.
It's got to be a surreal feeling to check it off and you're like, that's a whole that out of my life.
And wow, this line keeps getting close. Like, oh, another chunk of 40 gone. Oh, another little chunk. Oh, another little chunk. What did I do this week? Was this a good week? Was this worth it? Interesting.
I'm sure as you get towards, I don't know how long you've been using it, but if you were using it at the end of your 30s or when you get to the end of your 40s and you're like, holy shit, that whole decade's gone. And you see it and you're like checking into the last year of your 40s or 30s, that's got to be, I don't know.
It's intense,
but I think it's horribly motivating or horribly depressing or both.
Yeah, I think it's intense. And a lot of people are like, well, why would you do this? It's so dark. Like, I couldn't deal with that. I would have to like, I don't know, I could never have this on my wall or something. And I feel a little bit like it's important to confront this fact because it's real. And if it makes you uncomfortable, I think that is a signal. But I don't think the signal is, don't think about the fact that you're going to die. I'm skeptical of people's negative reactions to it. Like, I understand it, but I'm also like, don't you understand what this means?
I'd rather deal with it now when, hey, I've got time to do something about it than deal with it in my 60s and be like, I've wasted six decades.
Whoops. Yeah.
Oops.
I think it's worth confronting as early as possible.
Right.
Again, I hope I live a long time, but you don't know. Like, I might be on my last box.
I mean, I hope not.
I do too, but we don't know. So it's like, I got to make this week a good one.
Yeah. Well, when you're talking about making a week a good one, and when you're thinking about these weeks and it being good, when it's not running Tuple or building the next awesome feature for it, like, what do you like to do that isn't the Ben product guy? What is like, oh, hey, I'd like to, I don't know, go backpacking, hiking is what I'm into.
I sing. Singing is my passion. So right now I sing in a classical chorus that sings with the Boston Symphony Orchestra.
Wow.
And that is a source of a lot of my outside work joy.
Is that something that you've been doing your whole life or you recently got into?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I grew up in a family that sings a lot, still do. And I started joining choruses when I was like 8 or something.
Wow.
And I've been in some sort of ensemble for, my whole life, 30 years or something.
That is super cool. The most singing I do is in the shower or... Sure.
That's a good place to sing. Sounds good.
Or Three Sheets to the Wind at karaoke, but it's a lot of tequila to get me to that point. I don't like singing in front of people.
Fair enough.
Props to you for being able to do it at that level too. Doing things in front of people is scary. I have found as I've started speaking at conferences and stuff, it's like, oh, that's a lot of people out there listening to me talk.
I love that. I love the thrill. I live for it.
I like podcasting. I can talk to interesting people and I can talk and then I put it out. And like, unless someone messages me and goes like, hey, great episode, or you suck at talking. I'm just like, yeah, there's a couple hundred people listening to it every week. Cool, cool, cool. Is there anything that we didn't touch on? I feel like I was so excited to have you on and then I got you on and I'm like, forgot so much of like the, what am I going to ask him? Oh, I could ask him about this. And here we are. And I'm like, no, I don't want it to end. But also, what do you want to talk about?
I think that's top of mind is the talk I gave at LayerCon this year, which was about starting businesses, software businesses, or just, kind of software businesses biased for developers. There's a lot of people, particularly in the Laravel community, who are interested in starting like side hustles and making a little SaaS app and trying to make some money from software. And so I spent some time distilling my thoughts and putting it together in that talk. And I feel pretty happy with how it came out. It's not perfect, but I think it's a good chunk of advice there. So if that is you and you're like potentially interested in going from making money by having a salary and writing code for somebody, and you're interested in what like the next few steps might look like, that might be a good talk to go check out.
Okay. And are the videos out yet? Or are we
They're
still
out. Yeah, it's up.
Okay, cool.
It's on YouTube.
I will get the link for that and include it in the show notes so that people can find it easily. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It was awesome to get you have on. When I decided I would start a podcast, it was like, cool. Other people, like, I enjoy consuming podcasts. And I was like, well, I'll add to that collection of podcasts. And then it was actually Jason Sweat who kind of tipped me over the edge of like, should I do this? When he was like, I sort of did it selfishly. I just wanted an excuse to talk to cool people.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucking brilliant. I'm stealing that. So getting you on here is like fulfilling that. I've talked to some really awesome people and then it's like, I've seen so many of your videos at prior Rails and Ruby conf's, and I've bought Refactoring Rails and watched it a million times. And like, so getting you on, and obviously Tuple, but getting you on has been kind of like that. Yes, I got to talk to someone that I probably would not have had a good excuse to talk to otherwise.
Yeah, that's flattering. But also, I think this is an underappreciated benefit of podcasts, which is that it will get you a yes for a discussion better than a, hey, can I pick your brain on whatever? It's a good trick for that. And they can turn into their own successes anyway. And this I talk about in the talk, like it's great to make stuff. It sure is really handy to have an audience who likes you and trusts you. But yes, this is like definitely a really good side effect of that. And when I was hosting the Giant Robots podcast at Thoughtbot for all those years, it connected me with tons of people in the Ruby community. And I first didn't quite appreciate how good that was going to be for me. And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. I've had an hour long conversation with like 50 different notable developers. This is pretty handy.
Well, again, thank you so much for coming on, spending some time with us. I know you are a busy man with everything going on, being a head of product and all. So thank you for coming on. Where can people find you on the internet?
Twitter is probably your best bet. I think that's where I'm doing the most things. It's R00K is my Twitter handle.
Awesome. I'll include that in the show notes also, and links to Tuple and all the other good things. Thanks again, man, for coming on.
My pleasure.
And I hope to have you on again soon.
Sounds good. Take care.